Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in this morning for Mike Collins. It's 2 years to the day since a 12-week abortion ban took effect in North Carolina. In a May 2023 party-line vote, the GOP-controlled legislature sent SB 20, a bill making it more challenging to obtain an abortion in the state, to former Governor Cooper's desk, only to be met with a veto. After debate and protests filled the General Assembly, that veto was overridden days later, and the bill went into effect on July 1, 2023. That was one summer after the Dobbs Supreme Court decision that overturned the long-standing Roe v. Wade precedent, which opened up access to abortion nationwide some 50 years ago. Not long after the Dobbs decision, a wave of states in the South issued either total abortion bans or bans on abortion after roughly 6 weeks in pregnancy, which is more restrictive than North Carolina's. Now, a recent report from the Guttmacher Institute has revealed that North Carolina is the second highest state for the number of out-of-state patients receiving abortions in 2024. That was because for many people seeking abortions in the South, North Carolina became their closest option. More than one-third of the nearly 46,000 abortions provided in North Carolina were to patients traveling from other, more restrictive states. This morning, we look at the status of abortions in North Carolina as the state emerges as a hub for Southern abortion seekers. We'll hear from a medical practitioner working in abortion care and legal counsel for Planned Parenthood South Atlantic on the push for abortion access, while also hearing from folks who have been pushing back on abortion access and working toward their commitment to ending abortions. This morning, we'll be joined by Rachel Crumpler, reporter for North Carolina Health News, Dr. Jonas Swartz, obstetrician and gynecologist at Duke Health and associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Duke University, Susanna Birdsong, general counsel and vice president of compliance at Planned Parenthood South Atlantic. Then we'll hear from Ashley Vaughn, press director of the NC Values Coalition, and Mary Suma, general counsel of that group. First, we'll start with Rachel. Let's set the table here. Prior to the Dobbs decision, 3 years ago, what was the law on abortions in North Carolina, and what have been the changes since then?
Yes. So basically, we've seen a lot of changes that have happened where prior to Senate Bill 20 taking effect, which was the latest change to abortion access, we had a 20-week abortion law on the books. And that's kind of the status there. But with Senate Bill 20, which took effect, again, 2 years to the day, we saw abortion access change where most abortions after 12 weeks, you know, can no longer happen in the state. But there were exceptions that were added. So in cases of rape or incest, abortion is allowed through 20 weeks. In cases of life-limiting fetal anomalies, termination is allowed during the first 24 weeks of pregnancy. And I will note one caveat with that. There was a specific provision in the law banning any abortions due to a fetal diagnosis of Down syndrome, which is one of the most common anomalies in a human embryo. And then the last kind of exception category is that in cases of medical emergency to save the life of the mother, the procedure is allowed at any time in North Carolina.
And South Carolina's more restrictive law is now in effect, is my understanding. That bars most abortions after 6 weeks. Is that right?
Correct. And other things that are notable about kind of how the law changed with Senate Bill 20, there was an additional requirement added for an in-person counseling appointment at least 7 to 2 hours before a procedure. And before, we had this state-mandated waiting period in counseling, but it was able to be kind of over the phone or telehealth. But now it's kind of that in-person requirement that, you know, people say is a barrier, because now to access, you know, abortion in the state, you have to have 2 in-person appointments. There's also a requirement that was added to the law that any abortions past 12 weeks of pregnancy, so those exception categories I went over, those have to occur in a hospital setting. And before, you know, Planned Parenthood or abortion clinics, you know, across the state, the 14 that we have, they, you know, have experience providing care past 12 weeks, but they can no longer do that under this law.
And what do we know about the effect that this law has had on the number of abortions in North Carolina, and also how people from other states where there are more restrictions in place are reacting and coming to North Carolina?
So I'll first say, kind of like, despite these increased restrictions, like providers have really adapted to create or to keep kind of availability of appointments and respond to this influx of out-of-state patients seeking care. So abortion volume in North Carolina has actually increased substantially since 2020. That was before the Dobbs decision, before we saw, you know, a more constrained environment. So like in 2020, there's data showing, you know, about 32,000 abortions were performed. And last year in 2024, that grew by 45% to about, as you said, kind of 46,000 clinician provided abortions, according to data from the Guttmacher Institute. So we've seen this increase, and that's happening, you know, despite these additional restrictions that are in place. And a large portion of this increase is this out-of-state residents seeking care in North Carolina. And that's because, you know, post the Dobbs decision, when now states could, you know, determine access in their state, we saw a lot of laws pop up where most southern states now have more restrictions, either near total bans or 6 weeks bans. The only other state in the South that allows abortion beyond 6 weeks in pregnancy is Virginia. So Virginia provides more access than North Carolina. They allow abortion through the second trimester with no waiting period or counseling. But again, people are seeking care in North Carolina more so, and the numbers show like a big increase. So one in three, basically, abortions in North Carolina last year were to an out-of-state resident. And in some ways, that surprised providers that I've talked to, because we did become a more constrained environment. So people thought maybe the volume would drop. And initially there was a drop in volume, but there was kind of a response of adding capacity at clinics, bringing on more staff where possible to, again, accommodate this influx since, again, it wasn't an option for people in their home state for a lot of people. And one other kind of notable change was in May 2024, Florida passed a 6 week restriction, and before they had a lot of access and actually kind of were this place of access for a lot of the South. But that was kind of taken off the table, and North Carolina has seen a tremendous load come to the state.
And you mentioned Virginia, which does not, again, have a waiting period and allows abortions through the second trimester of pregnancy. And the data from Guttmacher said that state is now the most common destination for women in North Carolina seeking out-of-state abortions. Do we know if that's mostly women who have gone beyond North Carolina's 12-week limit and are now seeking abortions at the next state to the north? Kind of a cascade effect almost.
So we don't know exactly the individual circumstances of these patients, but we can see by the numbers that, yes, North Carolina, our residents of North Carolina, are also part of this phenomenon of having to travel due to changes in the law. And yes, Virginia is kind of the spot that many are going because it is the closest option to us. I have heard anecdotally from patients and also providers talking to me, yes, we're seeing some that are past the 12-week limit, so they are, you know, forced to seek care elsewhere. But it's also some people that maybe fall within the limit of North Carolina, but they don't have the time to take off work 2 days or like meet the requirements of these two visits. So they can see it potentially being easier to travel a little farther to go to Virginia to get care all in one day from a provider. So that dynamic also plays out. But I think, you know, people have also talked, sometimes it isn't the closest state. Some people are choosing to go to New York because they may have family there. So that may be easier. So it's not always the closest state is where somebody may seek care. It's kind of whatever works for their individual circumstances. But that has been a dynamic, you know, of just additional logistical hurdles of trying to navigate where to go, appointment availability. Do you have the funds to afford a flight? Do you not? So some people have also told me that they aren't able to kind of go to those lengths to seek care outside of North Carolina. So they may have to continue their pregnancy.
And can we see corresponding decreases in the number of abortions in other southern states that have more restrictions than North Carolina? In other words, as places like Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina enact more stringent laws than North Carolina, are their numbers going down while ours go up?
That has been some of the dynamics. And again, it's kind of hard to do a full cause and effect, but like there are correlations where that is happening. So specifically like Florida as an example, that Guttmacher data showed that like in 2023, 210 people from Florida sought care in North Carolina. Last year, following kind of the 6-week ban that took effect there, basically 1,300 people sought care in North Carolina.
So that's a sixfold increase. That's a really big big jump.
Yeah. So that's a contributing factor that, again, when people can't access care in their home state, they still desire that care, they're trying to go to the lengths and will find a way to access the care in another state.
And what have you been hearing in your reporting when you talk to doctors and patients in North Carolina about how the clinical experience and the actual logistics of obtaining an abortion have changed in the past 2 years?
It's been a lot. And I've been having conversations, you know, off and on with, yeah, providers and different patients who, you know, share their experiences. And it's just, you know, the legal environment's changed. Providers have had to really tease out what that means for patient care. Even, you know, providers who, you know, think care falls within, you know, the legal constraints, you know, sometimes hesitate or have to get this second opinion of does it meet the law, because they are, you know, kind of weighing this legal risk in the back of their minds. I've heard about kind of different like variability in patient care, because some providers are more comfortable and have more understanding of the law versus some others that maybe don't encounter as many patients, you know, kind of hesitate or have these pauses and what that kind of means for patient care. So it's just kind of operating in a whole new framework. Again, it was really frantic when the law first took effect. And still people have adapted, but what's come about is like no two pregnancies are the same, no two situations are the same. So like kind of with this law, there's kind of seems like there always be some questions of like, does this meet the criteria? Is this patient sick enough? Is this a life limiting, you know, fetal anomaly enough? So those questions will continue to circle in the mind of like how that applies in the patient care dynamics.
And that's Rachel Crumpler, reporter with NC Health News. When we return on Charlotte Talks, we'll hear from a doctor and a Planned Parenthood official about the impact of these abortion restrictions on patients in North Carolina. That's just ahead this morning on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in this morning for Mike Collins. It's been 2 years to the day since North Carolina's 12-week abortion restrictions went into effect. Since then, as other states in the Southeast passed more restrictive laws of their own, we've actually become a hub here for access to abortions. This segment, we're joined by Dr. Jonas Swartz, obstetrician and gynecologist at Duke Health and associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Duke University School of Medicine, and by Susanna Birdsong, general counsel and vice president of compliance at Planned Parenthood South Atlantic. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Dr. Swartz, what's changed in your clinical practice since SB 20, this 12-week abortion ban, became law in North Carolina?
Well, so much has changed, but despite the fact that abortion is incredibly safe, the legislature decided to restrict it, and the cascade effect is that they made it more dangerous to be pregnant in North Carolina. One of my core values is I think that everyone should have the freedom to make decisions about what they do with their body, and that people should have access to the highest quality evidence-based care. And through SB 20, the legislature made it, said for this one choice, we're gonna make it much more costly from a time perspective, much more financially costly. We're gonna say that you have to travel further to get abortion care, and sometimes you won't be able to access it at all. And then for people who have other pregnancy complications, such as miscarriage and ectopic pregnancy, they created so much fear for providers and for hospitals that people often have their care delayed and are pushed to other providers, forced to travel for that sort of routine bread and butter pregnancy care as well.
And why is that? What is it about these restrictions and ambiguities in the law that leads to these effects, specifically with things like miscarriage and ectopic pregnancies?
Well, there weren't doctors who were participating in writing this law. And so this 40-plus page piece of legislation contains a lot of information that has nothing to do with medical practice. There are ambiguities in medical care where, miscarriage care looks just like abortion care. You can't tell whether it's a miscarriage or an ectopic pregnancy. And so the result is that doctors second guess, other providers second guess, all right, well, is this miscarriage care that I'm providing, could it be counted as an abortion? Am I going to get in trouble for that? Is my patient going to get in trouble for that? And so they hesitate. And that just makes that delay makes things more dangerous for patients.
And Susanna, I wanted to ask, how has Planned Parenthood adjusted operations in North Carolina since SB 20? And then more broadly, the other states you operate in, Planned Parenthood, South Atlantic, especially South Carolina, how does that compare?
Sure. And I think I just wanted to add to Jonas's point, to Dr. Swartz's point, before we leave that topic, that also the consequences for providers in getting it wrong, the stakes are really high. And so I think when you see sort of folks taking time to make these decisions, is this clinically appropriate? Does this meet the confines of the law that are narrowed under SB 20? We know that it's a felony offense in North Carolina to provide an abortion outside the confines of the law. And so providers and their lawyers, hospital lawyers, et cetera, are thinking about all of those things. And I think that plays into the type of care that people receive in a way that it really shouldn't. So I just wanted to add that point before we left that topic.
And have we seen any charges under that law yet? Has there been any criminal prosecution, or is it more of a threat hanging over situation?
We have not seen criminal prosecution in North Carolina, but that does not mean that it does not create a chilling effect for current providers, for future providers, for people who, you know, are committed to providing this care, and for medical students and residents and fellows who want to provide this care. They're really looking around at other states and thinking, where can I go where I'm not going to be potentially criminalized for providing this care that is clinically appropriate and medically necessary for my patients? And that is a real loss for North Carolina when we think about the medical talent that we could be losing as a result of laws like Senate Bill 20.
And Dr. Schwartz?
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen that there's a decrease in residency applicants to states that have restrictive abortion laws in OBGYN, but across the board. And so we are losing out on medical talent. And it's not just, you know, part of it is you don't want to practice in an environment. Doctors are really rule followers, right? We get to where we are by following a lot of rules for a long time. And so we don't want to get in trouble. But people not only are making choices about how they want to practice, but about their own lives. You know, they are often at a time in their life when they're young, when they may be facing childbearing, and they may not want to be in an environment where if they did need to have an abortion, they ended up having to travel out of state for care.
And I wanted to also mention that with the one big, beautiful bill, the President Trump's tax and spending bill that is being debated this hour in the Senate and could become law soon, there are federal funding cuts for Planned Parenthood in that. Is that correct, Susanna? And what effect are those likely to have?
Yes, that is correct. The bill would make it, would defund or say that abortion providers across the country could not be reimbursed through the Medicaid program for care that is outside of the abortion context, because it has been a federal rule since the 1970s in a budget amendment called the Hyde Amendment that federal Medicaid funds do not cover abortion except in very narrow circumstances of rape, incest, and to save the life of the pregnant person. And so what we're talking about here is a loss of Medicaid funds for other type of preventive healthcare, for birth control, for STI testing and treatment, for cancer screenings, for the other types of care that Planned Parenthood affiliates and other abortion providers around the country also provide as part of the full spectrum of reproductive healthcare. That is what is at stake in the bill that is currently going through this voterama slog in the Senate, has already passed the House version of it, and we're waiting, you know, to see what happens with the final push today in the Senate, and then we'll have to go back to the House for reconciliation, of course, because the Senate version is different. But this is a real existential threat to healthcare, to reproductive healthcare, to preventive healthcare that is not abortion across the country. And it impacts us in our service area too. And, you know, you asked a question earlier about South Carolina and sort of how North Carolina and South Carolina compare. And this is an area where the Supreme Court just last week, the U.S. Supreme Court, had a decision.
The Medina case, correct?
The Medina case, correct, yeah. That allows the state of South Carolina to remove Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program in South Carolina, negatively impacting patients in South Carolina who are no longer, you know, the eventual impact of that move by the state is that people will no longer be able to come to Planned Parenthood for those types of preventative services. And what Congress is doing is basically taking that South Carolina playbook nationwide.
And what I've read on news coverage of this is that about 20% of South Carolinians receive health care through Medicaid, and about 5% of those recipients, which doing math is always dangerous, is about 50,000 folks sought sexual and reproductive health care services at Planned Parenthood. So that is folks who potentially would not be able to access those other services you're talking about as well, like contraception. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. It's about abortion. The reason that the governor of South Carolina removed Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program has nothing to do with the fact that with the quality of the care that we provide, with the types of care that we provide, except for abortion. It is about abortion. He removed Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program because we are also an abortion provider. But the impact of that decision has nothing to do with abortion. It has everything to do with the preventive care that you just mentioned, contraception, but also cancer screenings, STI testing and treatment, things that people want and need every day around the state of South Carolina and the country.
I think that underplays the numbers some. I mean, around in North Carolina, around half of Medicaid, around half of pregnancies are paid for by Medicaid. And among people having abortions, around three quarters would otherwise use Medicaid for their health care. And so we already are penalizing people with the Hyde Amendment, as Susanna mentioned, for needing abortion care. The Big Beautiful Bill, this Supreme Court decision, take away healthcare, take away access to healthcare from some of the most needy patients. And I don't understand, right? Like, that is not consistent with my values. I think that people deserve access to care. And these are both ways to dismantle systems that serve patients well. And in many cases, in the case of Planned Parenthood clinics in South Carolina and North Carolina, in the case of Title X clinics, which are also losing funding, oftentimes, these are the sole clinics that take Medicaid and are options for these patients. And so it is really a big impact.
And I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment here and go back to those numbers that Rachel with NC Health News was talking about last segment, which is about 46,000 abortions provided in North Carolina last year, roughly a 45% increase, according to their data from 2020. So, folks can look at this and say, well, people are still clearly able to access abortion care in North Carolina. More people are doing so. So what's the big deal?
I would say it's a big deal because it's not without consequences to those people's lives and to, in all the ways that the law makes it complicated and difficult for them to access care that should not be complicated and difficult to access, just like any other type of healthcare. The fact that we require this mandatory in-person visit at least 3 days before your abortion appointment is totally medically unnecessary, is financially burdensome, is logistically burdensome, especially when we think about people who already have children, because we know that the majority of people seeking abortion care are already parents. And so not only are they thinking about how am I going to take the time off of work to go to this additional medically unnecessary appointment in person at a clinic that may be far away from my home, especially if I'm traveling from out of state, but they're also thinking about how do I get childcare? Do I bring my child with me? What can I do to sort of jump over the hurdles that are put in front of me that are unnecessary by a state legislature who has no understanding of my personal life, of the reasons that I'm making this decision. And we see that people are jumping over those hurdles because this is care that they want and need to access. And so the numbers sort of maybe downplay the fact that the law is causing real harm to real people and that it is making this care way more difficult to obtain than it should be.
And Dr. Swartz, in 2023, before this bill became law, you predicted that the changes would cause chaos for medical providers and patients trying to sort out some of these ambiguities, especially that you highlighted earlier. Has the chaos that you were worried about come to pass?
Well, one example is people who have complications of pregnancy and need abortion care. And so increasingly, I would say every week we care for people who are facing some medical emergency and need an abortion to treat that medical emergency. And increasingly, we see those people transferred from facilities within our state or out of state because they're unable to get care there. It's really hard to arrange care out of state. I think it's hard until you think about for yourself, like think about getting a haircut in Virginia, right? Like, how would you find a place to get a haircut? How would you figure out how you're going to get there? How would you find a place to stay? Who would care for your kids? And that's a relatively, right, a haircut's a relatively trivial thing. Whereas getting healthcare, you want to be in a place where you live, you want to be with a provider you trust. It's generally something that people are taking more time for and are more serious about. When we are accepting out-of-state transfers, we have to figure out how are they going to pay for their care? How are they going to get here? Is it safe for them to drive themselves? Or do they need to be in an ambulance? Will their health insurance cover it, even though it's an emergency coming from that other state? And our healthcare system is not equipped to deal with those questions of those transfers and how these payments are going to happen, for example. Another example is, you know, I've seen a number of patients who have enough money to get to the clinic. They may sleep in their car. They may not have money to buy food for themselves or food for their kids who they brought along with them. And then they don't have money to get back. And we don't have the support built in to provide that care. We may be able to help them cover the actual abortion procedure, but we don't have the infrastructure to help them get home, help them get the food and lodging that they need while they're there necessarily, help them get transportation. And so we've become accustomed to helping patients with those things. You know, we've all become travel agents and, you know, logistics experts, but that wasn't part of our job before 2023.
About more than 60% of people in North Carolina who have abortions, my understanding is, use abortion medication, pills like mifepristone. And what is the impact of these changes specifically been on access to pills and abortion medication, the most common way to do it?
Well, one of the big changes since the Dobbs decision has been increased access to medication abortion pills. And it happened to coincide with increased access from the COVID pandemic and increased access to telemedicine for medication abortion, which we know is safe. You know, mifepristone is one of the most studied drugs. There are hundreds of thousands of patients in hundreds of studies that have shown that mifepristone is safe. And yet there has been uncertainty inserted by a number of court cases, and even more recently by Robert F. Kennedy's Jr.'s decision to review the safety of mifepristone based on some junk science that came out recently, as though that could, you know, controvert these hundreds of other studies that were in peer-reviewed journals. So on the one hand, you know, it's been really important to patients that they are able to access abortion medicine, that though we don't provide telemedicine medication abortion because we're not allowed to in North Carolina, people do access it online through online providers. And on the other hand, there are increased questions about whether people will continue to have access to this very safe drug and this very safe evidence-based regimen.
That's Dr. Jonas Swartz, a physician and professor at Duke University, and also Susanna Birdsong, Vice President of Compliance and General Counsel at Planned Parenthood South Atlantic. After the break, we'll hear from representatives of the North Carolina Values Coalition, one of the strongest supporters of the state's abortion restrictions, about the law's effect and what's ahead. That's next, this morning on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Eli Portillo, in this morning for Mike Collins. Today marks 2 years since North Carolina's 12-week abortion ban went into effect. We're examining the legal, practical, moral implications of that law. Joining me now are Mary Suma, General Counsel at the North Carolina Values Coalition, and Ashley Vaughn, the group's press director. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So we heard earlier that North Carolina, despite these new restrictions, has become somewhat of a hub for people seeking abortions in the Southeast. From your perspective, is this law, SB 20, which blocks most abortions after 12 weeks, working the way you hoped?
Would you like for me to go first, Eli? Or Ashley, go ahead.
Either choice.
Well, first of all, this law lowered the restriction from 20 weeks to 12 weeks, which would have the effect of saving additional lives. But also, the other point of the law was to put prudent steps in place so that the woman who is seeking abortion would be safe and get the care that she needs to make sure that there aren't harmful complications such as can occur with an ectopic pregnancy. So, for example, the requirement that there is an in-person visit and that the purpose would be to locate the pregnancy. That is a provision that is there to protect the woman, to make sure that she doesn't have an ectopic pregnancy, because we know that if she is having a medication abortion, that will not end that pregnancy if it's an ectopic pregnancy.
There's also, I want to make some comments about what two of your previous speakers talked about. The statement that abortion is incredibly safe. We know that 63% of abortions are occurring through abortion pills. They have a 10.93 complication rate, including hemorrhaging, sepsis, infection, and other adverse effects after within 45 days following the mifepristone, taking the mifepristone and the misoprostol. I also take issue with the fact that we call it care. This is the termination of human life. And the primary role of the state is to protect life. There was a lot of bantering about the fact that it's a felony and how horrible that is. If you consider life to begin at conception, then the termination of that life is murder. And so what we're talking about is protecting human life. And for those women who decide that they want an abortion within those 12 weeks, these are not barriers. These are well thought out. Doctors were involved in the decision making on what was going to go into the bill, provisions that protect the safety of the woman. There was the comment made about how this is confusing for ectopic pregnancies, or for women who have ectopic pregnancy, whether those babies can be removed during an ectopic pregnancy. Absolutely. If you read the statute, it specifically says that ectopic pregnancies are not considered abortions under the definition of North Carolina law. I find it interesting that there was a lot of conversation about Planned Parenthood and how we can't defund Planned Parenthood because they provide all these great services and all these women are going to be affected adversely without being able to provide the services. The simple answer is stop abortions. Then you qualify for the money. This is the same type of provision as we have internationally with the Mexico City policy. So if Planned Parenthood is so concerned about providing other services to women, then just stop abortions. Then they would qualify to receive this federal money. So again, SB 20, does it do what we intended it to do? It does what we intended for it to do by informing women about the side effects of having an abortion. It is not like taking an aspirin. It is surgery in many cases. It is taking drugs that we are finding to be 22 times more complications than has been reported by the FDA. A recent report found that the serious adverse effects following mifepristone is at least 22 times as high as the summary figure of less than 0.5% in clinical trials. So as we go back, and I think the Trump administration is going to review the safety or unsafety of these abortion pills, they're going to find that these abortion pills are far more dangerous. As far as ordering them online, this has become a huge problem. You can now order abortion pills online from any state in the country. There was a report in Guardian 2022 that said that we have 2,000, this was from 2023, I believe. You have 2,000 shipments coming into North Carolina every month. There was a case in Asheville where a girl delivered the baby at 25 weeks with abortion pills. No involvement of a doctor, no care or determination with an ultrasound that the pregnancy was not ectopic. The mother had enough sense to take that baby and the girl to the hospital. The baby lived, the mother lived, but you're not going to find those kinds of positive results every single time the longer you wait to take these abortion pills.
I'm not a doctor. I just wanted to say the FDA has approved Mifeprex originally in 2000. So it's a drug that's been in use for about 25 years now, and it is able to be ordered via telehealth because those restrictions on in-person prescribing were relaxed, I believe, during the pandemic when more people were using telehealth. I want to back up a little bit, though, and you mentioned the 12-week limit is doing what you hoped for, but last year, NC Values published a summary of where things stand and concluded that, quote, our 12-week limit on abortion is accomplishing very little. And that's because most, I believe 92% of abortions occur before that 12-week mark. You had also said, you know, it's your belief that life begins at conception. So I know there have been bills introduced to lower that abortion restriction limit in North Carolina to be more in line with the states around it, which could be a, you know, 6 week or a near total ban. Is that something that you think this state and state legislators, still need to be pushing for?
Yes, we would absolutely support that. We supported a heartbeat bill that was filed this last session.
Was that HB 944, 844?
Is that correct, Mary?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we helped with that. We supported that. We would love to see the needle move in that direction so that we can save even more lives. And it's interesting, there was a WRAL poll last year that showed that 41% of North Carolinians believe that life begins at fertilization. So it's not, this isn't some niche extreme view. This is 41% of North Carolinians are saying that they understand this.
Yeah. And in that poll, I think 44% or 43% supported a 6 week abortion restriction. 44% said they opposed that idea. And the rest, the balance, 13-14% were undecided. It looks like to me, looking at those numbers, that there's a pretty even split and, you know, possibly an undecided group in the middle. Do you think that pushing for those lower restrictions and an earlier ban puts you out of step with the majority of voters in North Carolina? You know, if you've got 43%, it seems to me that you might be risking backlash to your agenda there.
Well, this is our agenda.
Sure.
We want to save lives, and we want to, you know, for anyone who is undecided about this, or even who doesn't agree with this, we have work to do talking to these people and changing minds. You know, anyone can change their mind on this. Anyone can change their mind. Dr. Swartz, he can change his mind. If someone is planning to have an abortion today, they can change their mind. If someone's had an abortion in the past, they can change their mind. And Dr. Swartz talked about his values being choice and people having a right to access care. Well, our deep value and our belief and many people's belief is that life is a human right. And this is in the Declaration of Independence. This is in our state constitution. This is a self-evident truth that people have a right to life. Okay. And so if you start there, then you can work your way towards a place of consensus for people. But this is our value. This is our belief. And yes, we have a lot of conversations to have with people. Polls show us that in 2024, the polls showed us that the group that we really need to be talking to is women under 30. We really need to be talking to women under 30 and helping them realize, okay, your life has value. Any child that you may conceive, that life has value. And we want to support you, and you have what it takes to be a mother. And if you're not in a position to be a mother, then there are options for that too, and we can support you. But this is the message that we need to get out, and we do need to have these conversations so we can move people in that direction.
And I want to, go ahead.
That's okay. Most of your abortions occur because women feel like they have nowhere to go. And part of SB 20 addressed in the appropriations, we gave a tremendous amount of money to crisis pregnancy centers. We increased money for adoption and foster care. We increased money for child care for those who are financially unable to provide it. So SB 20 was not solely about, it was about three things: protecting life as much as we could at the time based on the consensus in the legislature, and certainly we want to decrease it, protecting women and providing them with informed consent on what exactly they're doing and the risks involved, and thirdly, to support women who are courageous enough to choose life so that they do not feel like their only option is abortion. So we tried to make that law as comprehensive as possible to help the woman, to protect the baby, and to support children and mothers who decide to have their children. So that's pretty much what we were trying to do with SB 20. So in one sense, yes, we have more abortions. Obviously, most of your abortions occur before 12 weeks in North Carolina, so we did not succeed there in reducing abortions, especially with your out-of-state abortions. But we certainly increased informed consent and certainly increased services to women who choose life. And for that reason, I think in that sense, it was successful.
And one criticism I've heard from folks who support more access to abortion is that what has happened in effect since Dobbs is the creation or perhaps the return of sort of a two-tier system where you have people who can afford to travel no matter where they are, and if they want an abortion, they'll go somewhere and get it, and people who can't and will either, you know, incur big financial hardships to get an abortion or simply won't be able to. How do you respond to that? And how do you think of that different, that possibility of if you've got money, you're going to get what you want?
I think you have to go back to the basic premise that I'm arguing for here, which is that the life is precious. The unborn life is precious. So why would we think it was a bad thing if people choose life? The whole point that we are making here is that if you, and Dr. Swartz told us his values, that choice and access are his values, but the value that we are arguing for is the life of that unborn child. And I think something that's really missed is the fact that abortion harms women. You know, Mary talked earlier about the risks and, you know, that can happen to the woman's body, but also abortion really strikes at the heart of motherhood and womanhood. I mean, I have a friend who is a midwife, and she told me a story about, she has many patients that she has longstanding relationships with. And she had one patient that that came and was pregnant and had the baby and was so thankful and excited to have that baby and became a mother. She got pregnant 3 months later. She came back. She was pregnant with twins, and she just felt she could not do it. She was a low-income woman. She's got this baby that's only 3 months old. She's pregnant with twins. And so she decided to have an abortion, aborted the twins. Okay. She came back some months later. She's pregnant again. She decides to keep the baby from the third pregnancy. When she delivers that baby, she didn't look at the baby. She couldn't hold the baby. She could not bond with the baby. So this is, we need to help mothers. This is harmful. These things hurt mothers, and we need to help them heal.
And As we close here, I just wanted to ask one last quick question. We only have a few seconds. Are you going to be pushing the legislature to continue bills that would lower the abortion restrictions to either 6 weeks or a near total ban?
Yes, we will. And we've also had a bill introduced this legislature restricting abortion pills. That's the most dangerous thing that's going on right now through the mail.
And that's Mary Suma, general counsel at the NC Values Coalition. Also, Ashley Vaughn, the group's press director this segment. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.